of all of the places and all of the spaces that I've ever seen and that I've ever been. It's true.
Have you ever seen the fabulous coverage of the wildebeest on their journey? It's just mesmerising. What's less happy to watch is emus, hundreds of them, trotting along beside the rabbit-proof fence, trying to get to the other side where maybe they can get to water and food. Fences, those innocuous-looking things that are everywhere, are making a big difference to animals, and we need to learn more about it. To do so, we're going to talk to Bill Lawrence. He's the Distinguished Research Professor at James Cook University. Bill Lawrence, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thanks, Amanda. Nice to be here.
Now, what's the story? What got you into looking at the role of fences in great animal migrations?
Well, really, we're interested in how large-scale human developments are changing the world in general. And one of the largest kinds of biological phenomena that we have on the planet are these great animal migrations. And of course, they don't just encompass big terrestrial animals. They include birds and they include marine animals and all kinds of things. But, you know, it's really the norm, more than many people appreciate, for species to move sometimes incredible distances, heroic distances of thousands of kilometers, say, for instance, between the wintering ground, which might be warmer and more tropical, and their summer breeding ground, which might be a cooler area, and to do this year in and year out. And then they make these incredible journeys. And through, you know, starvation and very difficult conditions and predators waiting for them along the line. So it's difficult enough for them as it is. And then humans, unfortunately, are just fragmenting and shattering the landscapes in which they survive, and that is creating a lot of additional complications.
You've got some figures on the large mammal species that migrate en masse in Africa and how many are now extinct. When you say that, for example, what you've said is 14 large mammal species known to migrate en masse, five migrations were already extinct. You don't mean the animals in the migrations, you mean those migrations no longer happen.
Yeah, exactly. The migrations are gone. And, you know, nobody ever sets out to destroy a migration. What they find is, you know, you just get development, people start putting up fences, they start bulldozing land, turning it into agriculture, you get a lot more poaching and animal hunting, and then just suddenly one day the migrations stop. And we've seen this again and again over the planet. I can give you so many examples of it. I mean, go to North America, you know, it used to have herds of 4 million bison running across the plains, and today we don't have that at all. We used to have passenger pigeons that would darken the skies for hours. There were so many of them. Today they're extinct. Here in Australia, you know, you have mass movements of emus and cassowaries that are being completely blocked by the dog-proof fence and the rabbit-proof fence. I mean, everywhere you look, you see these, you know, incredible phenomena that are being completely disrupted by human agency. And the thing that I think a lot of people haven't realized is just how bad fences are, you know, especially for these big animals and, you know, not for insects and things like that, but for these big spectacular animals that have such important impacts on ecosystems in many ways. And they're just being halted by fences. And one interesting thing is that we didn't really know how many fences there are. We still don't. But there was one recent study done in Alberta, Canada, and they measured the amount of fences and the amount of paved roads, and they found 16 kilometers of fencing for every 1 kilometer of paved road. So that tells us something.
Sure does. I'm talking with Bill Lawrence, Distinguished Research Professor at James Cook University, about something so mundane as fences. But you know what? The great mass migrations of animals that are just so fabulous, being killed out by the ordinary old fence. You tell the story of a fence that had blocked a zebra migration in Botswana. It was there in 2004. It was removed then. And in 2007, what you saw was one of the longest animal migration routes in the world. In other words, they can come back. Is it feasible to restructure fencing to provide pathways so that you can still have development, but routes normally taken by these migrations can be left. In the same way that we build a highway, can we leave a highway for the animals?
Yes, I think that's a really hopeful sign. I mean, I think when we talk about this, it isn't all bad news. There is hope for the future, and that really striking example in Botswana, I mean, that's one of the largest mammal migrations on the planet right now, is this huge zebra movement. And as you said, only 3 years prior to it, they had essentially stopped the migration altogether. They removed the fence, and now they have this incredible zebra migration happening in Botswana. And I think that one of the things we have to understand is, look, animals, we can't just create little paths through the landscape and little paths, you know, through areas and say, okay, that's where wildlife are going to go. Because wildlife, unfortunately, they don't understand that. That's not how they've migrated in the past. It's not how they migrate historically. I know with one of my students that was up in Malaysia studying highway underpasses there, and they were trying to get the elephants, which were a real problem with getting hit by cars. And of course, they were, you know, destroying vehicles, but they also didn't want to see the elephants being slaughtered. And they were trying to get the elephants to move under about 18 of these different underpasses along a very long stretch of highway. And so in order to try to encourage the elephants to do that, they put up these big electric fences, very powerful electric fences. Well, the elephants would come along to that electric fence, and they would do one of two things. They're very smart animals, you know. Either they would knock a tree over and just break the electric fence right there, or actually sometimes they would just come up to their buddy and knock him into the electric fence and break it that way, and then cross the road wherever they wanted. So the thing about wildlife is they're going to move where they want to move. And so, you know, we can't have our cake and eat it too. We can't just develop the world and continue all these new highways and infrastructure projects and shredding the last wild places and say, oh, well, you know, we'll put in a few little boutique animal crossings and a few little things here and there, and it'll make us feel better. We'll spend a little bit of money and everything will be fine. That's not going to work. We really need to get serious about saying, where are the critical places for the animal migrations? And let's not put fences, and let's not put barriers, and let's not destroy the habitat or allow heavy poaching in those areas. If we do it that way, we can sustain some of these great animal migrations. So I think that, you know, we've had a planet that's had a truly wondrous animal phenomena. And what's happening is we're forgetting what it's like. Our grandparents saw a lot of that, and their grandparents saw a lot of that. And then what's happening is it's incrementally over time becoming less and less common, and we're forgetting about it. And so some of the most spectacular things that have ever happened on the planet are kind of disappearing from our lives and from our imaginations and from our memories. And I think that it's a tragedy to lose that. Also, you know, we've got to be willing not just to not put in new fences, but we also got to be willing to tear down some of the existing fences, because, you know, look at what the dog-proof fence is doing to emus and the rabbit-proof fence. I mean, you're getting tens of thousands of emus and kangaroos and other species that are starving to death, that are hitting those fences. And in a land that's notoriously variable in terms of its rainfall and its vegetation growth and where species need to move to survive, and they just can't get past it.
Bill, you mentioned Botswana as being one of the great places left where we might be able to make some changes here. Tourism is very important there, isn't it? And perhaps people need to realise just how much money can be made out of letting animals be restored to the normal situation they were in before all these fences were built.
Yeah, absolutely, Amanda. Botswana has a very large and vibrant and rapidly growing tourism industry. Tens of thousands of jobs are being sustained by tourism right now. It's estimated that by 2028, there's going to be over 40,000 people directly employed by tourism, and that doesn't include all the indirect effects of additional industries that are supported by the tourism income. Look, nature lovers around the world will come great distances to watch these unbelievable animal migrations. And Botswana is an important point right now because Botswana is trying to decide, and unfortunately seems to be leaning the wrong way, essentially of fencing up much of the country and destroying some of the last great migrations in that country. So I think that's a really significantly bad environmental mistake, but it's also a bad economic mistake. So absolutely, I think we can take advantage of the wonders of these kinds of phenomena and the critical role that they play in nature and in natural ecosystems, and also take advantage of their economic benefits because they really are significant.
Mm. Bill Lawrence, Distinguished Research Professor at James Cook University, thanks very much for joining us on what is a slightly depressing topic, but at least it gives people something to focus on and something good they could be a part of. Thanks again.